For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It is July the 15th. We are in Shrei Asar, and we are in Zechariah, Perek Tes, Chapter 9. This will be the second to last of our classes before we break for this summer. Next week will be our last class before we break for the summer. Perek Tes, Pasuk Aleph. Masa Dvar Hashem Be'eretz Chadroch. This is a Masa, which means a Nevuah. There are various languages for Nevuah, for prophecy. Masa is one of them. So this is the word of Hashem in the land of Chadroch. V'Damesek Menuchaso. And Damesek, his resting place. Now, Zechariah was not in the land of Chadroch, and he was not in Damesek. Damesek is Damascus, and that's not where Zechariah was. This is a reference to something for the future that has to do with Chadroch, which is an area near Damesek, and Damesek itself. And the pasuk ends off, Ki la Hashem ein Adam, because to Hashem is the eye of man, v'chol shivtei Yisrael, and all of the tribes of Yisrael. Now this perek is going to be dealing with the immediate geula, the immediate redemption of the Jews rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash for the second Beis HaMikdash, as we've been talking about the whole time in Zechariah. And also a little bit of a nevuah concerning some events that will take place during the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. But the primary focus of this parak is really Yemos HaMashiach, is the days of Mashiach. And we'll see some psukim that, as Rashi points out, cannot be interpreted any other way. Here in this pasuk, the Tanaim debate what the pasuk is talking about, but in the end, everybody agrees there is some reference to Mashiach. The conclusion of the debate appears to be that the reference to Chadroch and Damesek is a reference to the expansion of the city of Yerushalayim. It's clear in the Gemara that the city of Yerushalayim will expand significantly in the times, well, we don't know if it's the times of Mashiach or after that, but at some point in the future that Yerushalayim is going to expand far beyond its current borders. And the Tanaim tell us that this pasuk is telling us that Yerushalayim will expand all the way to Damesek, which is a massive city, that it would go that far. Now, an expansion of a city is not really that dramatic, even though it sounds dramatic. It just depends where you draw the city limits. If you think about it, with the metropolitan Atlanta area is far greater than the Atlanta city limits, and that is true for all of the large cities that we know of. In fact, the Northeast Corridor from Boston down to Washington, D.C., if you look at it in one perspective, you might consider that to be just one gigantic city ranging all the way from Boston down to Washington, D.C., because the area is built up either residentially or commercially virtually the entire way. And so one could consider that to be one massive city, even though we call it different names and we say there are city limits. But if you just look at the structures, you could, from a bird's eye view, consider it to be one very large city. So the expansion of Yerushalayim in terms of buildings going out to Damesek, that in and of itself may not be so remarkable. But what is remarkable is that we know Yerushalayim is not just any city. Yerushalayim is a city of Kedusha. It's a city of sanctity that has ruchnius implications, it has spiritual implications, but it also has mitzvah implications, because there are things that are allowed to be done in Yerushalayim, which you can't do anywhere else. You're only allowed to eat certain karbanos in the city limits of Yerushalayim. You're only allowed to eat Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim. And many things of that nature, the boundaries of Yerushalayim determine where the halachos begin and end. Furthermore, we know that there is a mechanism through which Beis Din, the Sanhedrin, can expand the city limits of Yerushalayim. I'm talking about the halachic city limits of Yerushalayim. There is a process, and it involves a karban todah, and it involves going around the wall, going around the perimeter of the new city, in other words, where you want the new boundaries to be. There is a process by which that can be done. So the fact that it can be expanded is not in itself remarkable. But the distance by which apparently it will be expanded, that is remarkable. And if we are to take this literally, it means that Yerushalayim will become an incredibly gigantic city with halachic implications. The end of the pasuk tells us, "Ki la Hashem ein adam, for to Hashem is the eye of man, v'chol shivtei Yisrael." So, there are several ways of understanding this. One way is that this is a continuation or a restating of what was mentioned at the very end of Perek Ches of chapter 8, in the very last pasuk of Perek Ches, where we said that in the future that all the many of the non-Jews are going to want to connect with Hashem, and they'll do so by connecting to us. And the way that the Pesukim explained it, or the way the Chazal explained the Pasuk, is that there'll be 2,800 non-Jews per Jew trying to connect to Hashem. So here as well, Ki la Hashem ein Adam, for to Hashem is the eye of man. That means the eye of the entire world will at that time turn towards Hashem, v'chol shivtei Yisrael. They're also going to turn to all of the tribes of the Jewish people, because it'll be their ticket to join together with Hashem. The Medrash also reads the end of this pasuk to say that Hashem's eye, so to speak, is on man, which means on the Jewish people. That every single individual of the Jewish people is significant to Hashem, equal to all of creation itself. Pasuk Beis, verse 2. So, referring to the future, V'gam Hamas Tigbol Ba, also Hamas will be bounded by it, which means Hamas, which is another city, will want to join in to Yerushalayim. Want to become part of Yerushalayim. Tzor v'Tzidon ki chachma ma'od. Also, Tzor and Sidon, despite all of its wisdom, despite all the wisdom that you find in Tzor and Sidon, despite all of its wisdom, it's still going to want to join with Yerushalayim. No one will value other things other than connecting to Hashem, which they will see that is best done by joining with Yerushalayim. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. Vativen Tzor Matzor La. Tzor has built for itself a great fortification, a great powerful city, great strength. Vatitz bar kesef ke'afar, it has gathered silver like dust, v'charutz ketit chutzos, and gold, or something that shines like gold, like the mud of the road. Tzor has become an extremely powerful and economically powerful city or area in the time of Zechariah. Hine Hashem yorishena, behold Hashem will impoverish it. V'hika vayam chela, and strike into the ocean its strength, its wealth. Tzor is located on the coast. V'hi v'esh teyachel, and it will be consumed by fire. Tzor, although it is not technically Edom, it's not technically Esav's city, at least from a if you look at the ancient map, it's not going to be part of it. However, Chazal referred to Tzor as being the seat of material success, representing Esav's material success. And Tzor will be utterly destroyed. When that happens, Pasuk Hey, verse 5, Tera Ashkelon v'sira, Ashkelon will see this and be afraid, v'aza v'sachem od, and Aza will see this and it will tremble very much. Aza seems to be a city, but of course we know Aza today is an area, as in the Aza Strip. I say that seriously. The ayin is said gutturally, and that is referring to Gaza. Gaza Strip is Aza. The Ekron Kihovish Mebata, and Ekron, because it's what it was looking towards, it was looking to Tzor. Ekron was looking to Tzor for its inspiration, for its leadership, and now it is dried up. Va'avan Melech Me'aza, and Aza has lost its king. Va'ashkelon, the station of Ashkelon, will no longer be settled. All these places will become destroyed and desolate because of their dependency on Tzor, and Hashem is going to bring down Tzor. V'yashav Mamzer be'Ashdod, and Mamzer will dwell in Ashdod. V'yichrati go'on plishtim, and I will cut off the glory of the Plishtim. Ashdod is also a city of the Plishtim on the coast, and the irrespective of what it means today, but that's what it is. And it says that that Mamzer will dwell in Ashdod. Now, there is a debate what this means. Now, we know, what is a Mamzer? The term Mamzer is found in the Torah itself. It's not a rabbinic term. It's in the Torah itself. And what is a Mamzer? The Torah tells us, Lo yavo Mamzer b'kal Hashem. A Mamzer may not marry into the regular Jewish people. He may not marry a regular Jew. A male Mamzer may not marry a regular Jewess, and a Mamzeres, a female Mamzeres, may not marry a regular Jew. And that is for all generations. Their offspring cannot marry, their offspring cannot marry, their offspring cannot marry, all the way down. They can marry someone who is not a regular Jew, but they cannot marry a regular Jew. So, what is a Mamzer? Halachically, there is a debate amongst the Tanoim, what is a Mamzer? Everybody agrees a Mamzer is a child born to a union that should not have ever gotten together. That is a Mamzer. But what union are we talking about? So this is a debate. We rule that a Mamzer is a child born from Chayve Krisus, which means a child born from parents who their union is punishable with kares. There are various punishments for different prohibited unions. Kares is one of them. Some of them are more stringent than that. Some of them, the punishment is the death penalty. Others are not as stringent, that the punishment is only lashes. So, for example, the union of a brother and sister, that is kares. That is a case of kares. The union of a man and a woman married to somebody else, that carries the death penalty. That's worse than kares. On the other hand, a kohen who has a relationship with a divorcee, that is a lav, it's prohibited, it carries with it malchus, it carries with it lashes, but not kares. Therefore, a child born to those whose relationship carries with it kares, or worse, the death penalty, a child born from that would be a mamzer. A child born from a relationship that is less stringent than that, would only carry lashes, then that child is not a mamzer. So a child born to the relationship of a kohen and a divorcee, That child is not a mamzer. Now it happens to be, if it's a male child, that child is a cholol, which means that child is disqualified from being a kohen. For all intents and purposes, he's not a kohen. He's just a regular Yisrael, losing any privileges that the kahuna would have given him. But he is not a mamzer. On the other hand, a child born to the relationship between a brother and sister, or worse, a child born to a relationship between a woman and a man, a man and a woman married to somebody else, then a child from any of those types of unions would be a mamzer. So here it says that a mamzer will dwell in Ashdod. This is talking about the future. So what does that mean? So here, again, we have a debate. One opinion is that it actually refers to a mamzer, that the mamzerim will not be comfortable going into Yerushalayim because of their status, and therefore instead they will dwell in Ashdod, which is a reference here that Ashdod will become a Jewish place. It will be taken over by the Jews. It will no longer belong to the Plishtim. And it will become a place where those who are mamzerim will dwell. However, the Tanaim debate in Maseches Kiddushin whether mamzerim in the future, after the time of the coming of Mashiach, will mamzerim become, let's, for lack of a better term, full-fledged Jews? Will they shed their status as mamzerim? There is an opinion that says that they will shed their status as mamzerim, and instead they will become as regular Jews. So, according to that opinion, the Gemara questions, what are they going to do with this verse? This verse seems to imply that there are mamzerim in the future. And therefore, they understand that the term mamzer here is a different meaning than what it means in the Chumash. Really, the etymology of the word mamzer comes from the word zar. Zar means a stranger. That's what it means. It means someone who is strange or foreign. For example, if a person who is not a Kohen tries to do the work of a Kohen, he's called a zar. He's called someone who is strange to what he is doing. He's not supposed to be doing it. He's called a zar. That's a full-fledged Jew who is not a Kohen, who wants to act like a Kohen. He's called a zar. Therefore, one could learn this, could understand this pasuk to mean that a mamzer will dwell in Ashdod means strangers will dwell in Ashdod, meaning not the people who currently dwell there, not the Plishtim, but they will be supplanted and replaced by strangers. That means Jews who will take over that city and live there. And in that reading, the word mamzer here does not mean a child born to parents that should not have had a relationship. It just means a stranger. Those are the two opinions in the Gemara in Kiddushin. Pasuk Zayin, verse 7. Vasirosi damav mipiv, I will remove his blood from his mouth. This is referring to Esav. Hashem says, I will take the blood out of his mouth. Vishikutsav mibein shinav, and his abominations from between his teeth. This is speaking figuratively about how he has attacked and mauled and destroyed and consumed the Jewish people. Hashem says, I'm going to take the blood from out of his mouth and the abominations from between his teeth. V'nishar gam hu le'lokeinu, and he will also remain for our God. What does that mean, that he will remain for our God? V'hoya ki'aluf bi'Yehuda, and he will be like a teacher of Torah in Yehuda. What does that mean? Ve'ekron kivusi. And Ekron, which is a city, will be like Yivusi. Yivusi is a reference to Yerushalayim. The first time we encounter Yerushalayim in Sefer Shmuel, I don't know if it's the first time, I shouldn't say that, but in the conquering of Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim is called Yevusi. And Ekron will be like Yerushalayim. What does it mean that Esav will also be to our Hashem, our God, and he will be like a teacher of Torah in Yehuda? The Gemara tells us in Meseches Megillah that V'nishar gam hu le'elokeinu, he will also remain to our God, refers to the Batei Knesios and Batei Midrashos. It refers to the shuls and the base medrashes that are in Edom, that are in Chutz La'aretz, that they will in the future reside in Eretz Yisrael. That those parts of Edom, because they are shuls and Batei Midrashos, will remain to Hashem, even as Edom is destroyed, but the shuls and the Batei Midrashos will not be destroyed and end up in Eretz Yisrael. And what does it mean, Ki aluf b'Yehuda, like teaching Torah in Yehuda? So the Gemara tells us these are the Tartessios and the Karkasios, which are large gathering places of the non-Jews, where they gather together to do whatever they do. Those places will become places where the Talmidei Chachamim of Yehuda, the Torah scholars of Yehuda, will teach Torah b'Rabim, will teach Torah in public. That's what the Gemara says in Meseches Megillah. There are those who felt that, or feel that, the something like the Siyum HaShas, where Torah is being taught in the great gathering places of the non-Jews, where they gather there for their foolish endeavors, that it would then turn into a place of teaching Torah to the masses. Someone would like to suggest that perhaps a gathering like the Siyum HaShas was a harbinger of this nevuah. It's not the exact nevuah, of course. Mashiach has not come yet. And anyway, it was a very temporary thing. And it wasn't like the event was primarily a teaching Torah event. It was a celebration of Torah, but it was not a primarily teaching Torah event. Nevertheless, it may be a me'ain, like a sort of something that foreshadows the future with this nevuah, with this prophecy. Pasaches, verse 8. V'chanisi levesi matseva, I'm sorry, mitzava, and I will protect or fortify my house from the army, from any attackers, me'over umishav, from those who would go past and try to attack. V'lo yavor aleihem od noges, no longer will any kind of oppressor come upon them. Ki ato ra'isi be'inai, because now I see that happening, says Hashem, with my own eyes. I see what is going on with the oppressor that is bothering the Jews. That is no longer going to happen in the future. Gili ma'od bas Tzion, be very joyous, bas Tzion. Hari'i bas Yerushalayim, blow the shofar, the daughter of Yerushalayim, enjoy. Ki hinei malkech yavolach, behold, your king will be coming to you. Tzadik v'no shahu, a tzadik, and also a person of salvation. Ani v'rochev al chamor, a very famous phrase, a poor person riding upon a donkey. Val ayir ben asonos, that's another phrase that means a donkey. Same type of idea. Ayir is another word for a donkey. Ben asonos. Now, from here you would not know for certain that we're talking about Mashiach. There'll be a pasuk later, actually a few pasukim later, that will make it clear that this pasuk is talking about Melech HaMashiach. Your king is coming to you. Who is the king? Ani v'rochev al chamor. Ani does not really mean poor person. It actually means humble, like from the word anav, a humble person. Humble person riding upon a donkey. The riding upon the donkey is an indication of his humility. He doesn't ride on a fancy horse, or better, rather, he rides on a lowly donkey because he is humble. The Gemara tells us that there are conflicting psukim about Mashiach's arrival. There are psukim that indicate that Mashiach will come very quickly, that suddenly and quickly Mashiach will come. There are other psukim that suggest that Mashiach will come slowly, that it will take a lot of time before Mashiach comes. This pasuk is one of the psukim that indicates that his arrival will be slow and deliberate. Ani v'rochev al chamor, humble, riding upon a donkey, that's a slow, plodding animal. Not a fast, swift horse, but rather a plodding, slow donkey. The Gemara tells us that aren't the different psukim contradictory, and the Gemara says they are actually, they both depend on the circumstances. If we deserve it, then Mashiach will come quickly. If we don't deserve it, Mashiach will arrive slowly and deliberately plodding along. Therefore, this pasuk actually indicates that the arrival of Mashiach in the atmosphere of us not keeping the Torah properly, and therefore he moves slowly and in a plodding manner. However, it seems to me that's why we have two explanations for this phrase. It either means riding on a donkey because of how slow and deliberate the donkey is, or it means riding on a donkey out of his humility. If we don't deserve the Mashiach will come quickly, then the riding of the donkey indicates slow and deliberate. If we deserve the Mashiach will come quickly, then the riding of the donkey is only a method of indicating Mashiach's humility. Ani, humble, v'rochev al chamor, and riding upon a donkey. It would also seem to me that therefore one of the midos, one of the character traits that would be more direct in bringing Mashiach would be the attribute of humility. Seems that is a significant attribute for Mashiach and for the coming of Mashiach. Pasuk Yud, verse 10. V'ichrati rechev me'Ephraim, I will cut off chariots from Ephraim. That's not a bad thing. That means the Ephraim's chariots will no longer be needed. V'sus mi'Yerushalayim, and horses from Yerushalayim, there'll be no need for horses. V'nichras akeshes milchama, and the bow of war will be cut off, it won't be needed anymore. V'diber shalom la'goyim, and he, Mashiach, will speak shalom to the nations, there'll be no need for war. U'mashlo miyam ad yam. Another very, very famous phrase, and his sovereignty will be from sea to sea. That is not actually an accurate translation. We'll come back to that. U'minohar anav se'aretz, and from the river, that would be from the Euphrates, I believe, anav se'aretz, to the edge of the land. Yeah, from the Euphrates to the edge of the land. What does it mean, u'mashlo miyam ad yam? His sovereignty will be from, so the Targum translates this as from the ocean, miyam, from the ocean, that would be the Mediterranean, ad yam, and as far west as you can go. Miyam ad yam, from the west and as far west as you could possibly go, meaning all the way to the ends of the earth. The translation of from ocean to ocean is difficult, because that phrase works very nicely when you're talking about the United States, where the landmass from ocean to ocean is defined, and you can aspire to have a country from sea to shining sea. Eretz Yisrael, with the Mediterranean on one side, is right there. It's already on the coast. So it's just a question of going east to the either the Indian Ocean or the Pacific. But the phrase Miyam Ad Yam doesn't seem to fit from sea to sea. And therefore, the Targum does not render it that way. From the west all the way to the ends of the earth, just as the rest of the Pasuk means from the river, Euphrates, and to the end, to the ends of the earth, until the edge of the earth. So, this is how we know that we are talking about Mashiach over here, because no king of the Jewish people in the second Beis HaMikdash, aside from the fact we didn't really have a king, but no leader of the Jewish people ruled in with that kind of sovereignty. Therefore, this Pasuk is not talking about the second Beis HaMikdash, and none of the Pasukim around this Pasuk are talking about that. Rather, it is talking about the future and Melech HaMashiach. Pasuk Yudalef, verse 11. Gamat bedam briseich shilachti asirayach mibor. Also you, with the blood of your covenant, I've sent your imprisoned ones out of the pit, ein mayim bo, the pit that had no water in it. I've taken you out of that pit with no water in it. Here we have a reference, of course, to Yitzias Mitzrayim. There we were in a pit without water, meaning we were in bondage, and we got out, and we got out with the blood of our covenant, referring to the two bloods, as we know, that are referenced in Yechezkel, mentioned in the Haggadah on Pesach, and that would be the blood of the Korban Pesach, and the blood of the Bris Milah, of the circumcision. Those bloods are the covenants through which we got out of Mitzrayim. Pasuk Yud Beis, verse 12. Shuvu levitzaron. Return to your strength. Asirei hatikva. Those who are just trying to translate this in the best possible way. You're hoping, you're waiting for Hashem. Gam hayom magid mishne ashivlach. Also today, a magid mishne. Magid means to tell something over. Mishne means doubled. A double telling over of something. Ashivlach, I will return to you. I will tell you. There is something else being alluded to over here, Magid Mishneh. Now, the simple meaning, as Rashi tells us, is that Magid Mishneh means that in addition to telling you about Mashiach, says Hashem, I'm also going to tell you some nevuah, some prophecy about the second Beis HaMikdash. And we're about to have a short prophecy that is directed about some of the events of the second Beis HaMikdash, as you'll see. The events that we're going to talk about are ones that you are familiar with. However, the Medrash tells us that Magid Mishneh, being told something in doubled, is actually also alluding to something special that happened at this time, which we learned about when we learned Sefer Ezra. When we learned Sefer Ezra, we learned that Ezra HaSofer had several very important legacies that he gave over to the Jewish people. The Gemara tells us that had it not been for Moshe Rabbeinu, the Torah would have been given through Ezra HaSofer. He was the second place runner in the one who would be the through whom the Torah would be given. What happened instead of that? Ezra HaSofer did many things, but one of the things that he did is that he reestablished for us Ksav Ashuris. Ksav Ashuris means the block lettering that the Sefer Torah is written with. If you look in a Sefer Torah, you see the block print that is used. That is the original print of the Sefer Torah and the Luchos. And after we sinned with the golden calf, then that Ksav, that writing, was taken away from the Hamon Am, from most of the people from the rank and file, and instead it was replaced with Ksav Ivris. Ksav Ivris is very similar to our script Hebrew, but it is not as beautiful a writing. It also is a writing that lacks many of the nuances from which one can derive many, many secrets of the Torah. And only the great Talmidei Chachamim had access to Ksav Ashuris, to the original writing of the Torah. According to one opinion in the Gemara, that's actually why no one was able to read the handwriting on the wall back at the Seuda, back at the party of Belshazzar, when the hand came down and wrote on the wall, and he called to Daniel to read it, and only Daniel was able to read it. So the Gemara, the main opinion over there is that the reason why no one could read it is because it was in code. But one opinion in the Gemara is that no one could read it because it was written in Ksav Ashuris. It was written with this special block lettering, which at that time only the great Talmidei Chachamim, including Daniel, knew about it. Others did not know. They may have known there was another writing, but they didn't know what it was. And no one could read it except for him. So Ezra HaSofer, with the construction of the second Beis HaMikdash, reinstated Ksav Ashuris. And that's what we use today. We use that special writing today in our Sefer Torah. That is alluded to here with Magid Mishneh, telling you something which is Mishnah, which is doubled over. You had it before you lost it, and now I will give it back to you, says Hashem. Now you will have access to the Ksav Ashuris as a special gift with the construction of the second Beis HaMikdash. Now, what is that nevuah about the second Beis HaMikdash? Pasuk Yigimel, verse 13. Ki darachti li Yehuda keshes milesi Ephraim. I have used Yehuda and I have used Ephraim as a bow and arrow, Hashem says. In other words, I've used Yehuda and Ephraim as a method of fighting. I'm giving them power to fight. Va'orarti v'anayich Tzion, I have awakened your children, Tzion. Al banayich Yavan, against your children, Yavan. Against you, the children of the Greeks. That v'samtich kecherev gibor, and I've made you, you Jewish people, like the sword of a warrior. And you will have the strength to fight with and defeat the Yevanim, the Greeks, the Syrian Greeks, with the story of Hanukkah. And in that regard, talking about that and also talking about the time of Mashiach, we now have a pasuk which you might recognize because it is one of the psukim of Shofros. This is one of the psukim quoted in the Rosh Hashanah Musaf Davening, the 10 psukim that we say for Malchios and for Zichronos and for Shofros. This is one of the ones for Shofros. V'Hashem Aleihem Yeroeh. Hashem will appear over them. V'yotza Chabarak Chitzo. And his arrow will come out like lightning. V'Hashem Elokim Bashofar Yiska. And Hashem Elokim will blow on the shofar. V'alach besaros teiman, and it, the sound will go in the winds of teiman, it will go in a tempest against teiman. Hashem tzvakos yagen aleihem, Hashem tzvakos will protect them, will protect the Jewish people as this incredible upheaval happens of the blowing of the shofar. That's what we read until when we quote this pasuk on Rosh Hashanah. We read Pasuk Yudal, verse 14, and the first four words of Pasuk Tesvav, verse 15, Hashem Tzvakos Yogen Alihem, Hashem will protect them, and then we add on to that a prayer. Kein Hashem Togel Aleinu, we say that Hashem should also protect us. Now, when we read this, we ask Hashem that He should protect us, just as He is going to protect us in the future. V'achlu v'chavshu avnei kela, they will consume, they will conquer the people of the slingshot. The people of the slingshot refers to the Yevanim, to the to the Greeks. It doesn't have to be a slingshot. It can be a catapult. But with this, we will defeat them. Vishasu hamu kimo yayin. They will drink. The Jews will drink. The Jews will be excited like wine. Umalu kamizrak, and they'll be filled up like a mizrak. A mizrak is the bowl used to catch the blood when you offer a korban. The kohen catches the blood in a mizrak and then throws the blood on the mizbeach, on the altar. So they'll be filled up like that, meaning that will be filled up with joy, but it will be like a mitzvah, like the blood that's going to be thrown on the mizbeach. Kizavios mizbeach, like the corners of the altar. Vohushiyam Hashem Elokeim bayom ahu, Hashem will save them on that day. Kitzon amo, like the sheep of his nation. That is a reference again to Mitzrayim, just as he saved our nation in Mitzrayim, the sheep of his nation. We talked many times before about the connection between sheep and Yetzias Mitzrayim. Ki Avnei Nezer misnosesos al admaso, because Avnei Nezer, that means stones of a crown, misnosesos al admaso, would be held up in display over his land. There'll be precious gems that will be available in his land for the Jewish people. However, Chazal also tell us that this is a reference to the Kohanim, the Chashmonaim. The Chashmonaim are Kohanim, and as they defeat the Yavanim, they will exalt in the Avnei Nezer, the stones of the crown, not the crown on the head, but rather of the ornament, the stones of the choshen, of the breastplate, and the stones on the ephod, on the shoulders, that the Kohen Gadol wears. The Kohanim will exalt in those stones. Kimatuvo umayafyo, because what is his goodness, what is his beauty? Then what is Hashem going to bestow upon the Jewish people? Dagon bachurim, the grain for the bachurim, for the young men. Vesirosh, yinovev besulos, and tirosh, which is wine. Yinovev besulos, the young women will rejoice. So there'll be great abundance for the Jewish people when all of this happens. Now, what we have here in the entire perek is kind of a mixture between prophecies about Mashiach and the future, and prophecies about the second Beis Hamikdash. We know that the second Beis Hamikdash is not going to carry all of the greatness of the first Beis Hamikdash. We talked about this before. There are five major things lacking in the second Beis Hamikdash that were there in the first Beis Hamikdash. Perhaps the most important of that is the Shekhinah itself, Hashem's divine presence. At the same time, though, there is greatness in the second Beis Hamikdash. There is Ezra HaSofer, who gives us Ksav Ashuris, that special writing. There is the Chashmonaim, defeating the Yavanim. There are special things that go on in the second Beis Hamikdash. It is not like it is a terrible time. It just doesn't reach the greatness of the first Beis Hamikdash. So the second Beis Hamikdash is a wonderful thing. It's a great thing. And in certain ways, it really reaches great pinnacles. And those are mentioned here. However, because it does not reach the heights of the first Beis Hamikdash, it is clear that the second Beis Hamikdash is not the ultimate goal. Even those who lived during the second Beis Hamikdash understood that this is not where we need to be. This is not the ultimate redemption. This is a reprieve. This is a time where we have a chance to be close to Hashem, but there needs to be a greater level to be close to Hashem, and that's going to be the third Beis Hamikdash. Now, they didn't know when the second Beis HaMikdash would be destroyed. They didn't know how long it would last. And truth be told, I don't know that it had to be physically destroyed. It definitely needed to be remade into a third Beis HaMikdash, that's for sure. There needed to be a change in the Jewish people, which would then bring about a change in the structure itself of the Beis HaMikdash, of the second Beis HaMikdash. That would have to happen. And perhaps that's what they were hoping for, that it would not be destruction, but rather it would just be that we got better and better, and then everything would transform itself. But they certainly did not envision a 2,000-year galus, a 2,000-year exile, as we have endured. But here in this parak, the two time frames, that of the second Beis HaMikdash and that of Mashiach, are intertwined and spoken about together, seamlessly moving from one to the other. And it seems that that indicates that that's what could have happened, that the second Beis HaMikdash could have simply transformed into the third Beis HaMikdash. Unfortunately, we didn't deserve that. It was destroyed, leading to the period of time of Bein HaMitzarim, the period of time that we're in right now, the 3 weeks, and ultimately the 9 days in Tisha B'Av. That's because we didn't deserve it, but the Nevuah still stands true. And the third Beis HaMikdash will come, b'merav yomeinu, speedily in our days, and these Nevuahs, these prophecies will come true, even though we don't know when, and we don't necessarily understand the sequence of events and how things are going to happen, but we do know that they will come true. Any questions for tonight? Okay, a reminder that next week will be our last class before we break for the summer.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.